And chat.
There's a button at the bottom.
There's a button at the bottom of the home page.
But underneath the window.
Underneath the window where
the live video
where you see the live video sign underneath there. If you want to go in and chat, then you can participate, you can ask questions, you can make comments. But don't talk about your dogs and your school during the class. Or I'll cry right in the middle of this. I'll get so discouraged, I may never show up again. Okay. So, let's start out with another Mahatma. We'll quote another Mahatma, Mahatma Gandhi. Now, what did Mahatma Gandhi say about forgiveness? He said something really wonderful. He said, the weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is the attribute of the strong. And I love that quote because a lot of times, you know, the qualities or the virtues of saintly people can seem like a sort of weakness. Like, oh, I'm giving in if I forgive because the person treated me in a particular way and I'm allowing that person to take advantage of me. Or if I forgive, then the person will do it again. Therefore, I should be strong. I should stand up to the person and so forth. But I think it's, you could, if you really see, in most, of course, there may be exceptions, but in most situations, to take a more humble position is always the most difficult. Like it said, whenever there's an argument, the first person to say, I'm sorry, wins the argument. Because, and it takes a lot of strength to take the humble position. Now, it's one thing to theoretically speak about humility, to understand it theoretically, but to actually be humble in real life, in practical situations where people push our buttons, it's a whole different ballgame, it's a whole different world. So it's nice to meditate on the fact that to be humble, to be forgiving, to be tolerant, to be controlled when we feel like yelling, screaming, retaliating, all these things require tremendous amounts of strength. And anybody can get angry. We do it all the time. Anybody can be intolerant. Anybody can be revengeful. It doesn't require strength. In, you know, in certain circles, it might be seen as strength. But for us, as devotees, as those trying to become saintly, that's what we're trying to do. That's our goal, to become sadhu, saintly person. Then strength is in our humility. Strength is in our forgiveness. Wonderful quote. You ready for another wonderful quote? Okay. Humanity is never so beautiful as when praying for forgiveness, or else forgiving another. So both things. Forgiving, praying for forgiveness for something we have done to another, or praying for forgiveness for others, or forgiving others. That's it's like there's this word sadhubhushana. Sadhubhushana means, or ratnabhushana, it means the decoration, the jewel-like decoration of the sadhu, which means the jewel-like qualities of the sadhu. Sadhubhushana, the sadhu, the devotee, is decorated with all these beautiful qualities. So here this person is saying, this is Jean-Paul Richter. Richter. Sounds French to me. How would you say that? R-I-C. It's not French? Our Frenchman said it's not French. Okay. Jean-Paul Richter. Richter. Anyway. So I was just speaking with another devotee today, and we were talking about how different devotees communicate in their efforts to bring people to Krishna consciousness. And there's a certain kind of devotee who communicates, but this is true for everybody, but particularly there are certain devotees who communicate much more strongly by who they are than what they say. In other words, what they're saying is really communicating who they are as persons, as sadhus, as gentle devotees, as compassionate devotees, as empathetic devotees, as humble devotees. It's all communicated in how they express Krishna consciousness to others. So oftentimes, no matter what they express, these same qualities will always come through, and that's what moves people. So here this person is saying that humanity is beautified when forgiveness is manifested in people's lives, just as a devotee is beautified by all the quality, the sadhu qualities. You know, there's a story, Sanatana Goswami, he was feeling so unqualified to receive Lord Chaitanya's mercy. He was feeling terribly unqualified to be in his association, totally unworthy, totally undeserving of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And in expressing that humility, or not even expressing it, but just showing that demeanor, that humble demeanor to Lord Chaitanya's heart was melting. And he said, Sanatan, I cannot bear this humility. It's breaking my heart. So it's such a... And then I believe Mahaprabhu then said, this is the jewel. Humility is the jewel of the Vaishnava, the jewel of qualities of the Vaishnava. And although we're not talking about humility, we understand it, or I think it's apparent, obvious and apparent, that humility is required for forgiveness, because humility does not contain the desire to retaliate, to take revenge, to punish. As we had discussed in that story of Ambarish, when he was offended by Durvasa, he did not revenge. It was not his mood. So, you know, these qualities, they work together. It's difficult to be forgiving without being humble. And if you are humble, it leads naturally to forgiveness. So that's a very wonderful quote. Now, Bhakta Patrick, I forgive you totally for getting off track during the chat. Okay. This next one is very nice. This deals with empathy, sympathy, and compassion, which is described by Srila Prabhupada in the Srimad Bhagavatam as the greatest quality of a devotee is his compassion, the highest quality. And Prabhupada contrasts that to persons, or some persons who practice certain spiritual disciplines, but their focus is on self-purification. Their focus is not on the upliftment of others. So it's kind of ironic and paradoxical that one, you think of spiritual advancement, a person making spiritual advancement, but a person making spiritual advancement are very serious about it, not being concerned about others. It seems like a paradox, doesn't it? But there are people like that. It becomes, you could say it becomes a little selfish to one degree or another. So in contrast to that, Prabhupada's saying the jewel, the greatest quality of the Vaishnava is his compassion, or the greatest quality of a spiritual personality is his compassion. Now, on that note, we'll read the following quote, which it's meant to help us empathize with others. If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we would find in each person's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. Isn't that nice? I'm going to read that again. It is said, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that a compassionate devotee, he relates to others' suffering by his own experience. I am suffering in this, I'm living in this world, I have certain anxieties, I suffer certain things. Therefore, it must be true that others in this world similarly suffer. So naturally, a devotee becomes compassionate. And it's even interesting that Jiva Goswami has written that Krishna can't fully, or Krishna cannot be as compassionate. I mean, you can take this as you want, but it's more of a philosophical point. Krishna can't be as compassionate as his devotee, because his devotee comes in this world and experiences suffering and therefore can relate to the sufferings of others, where Krishna doesn't suffer. And then it said that, therefore, and it said that the nature of compassion, it goes, Krishna's compassion goes where Krishna's devotee directs it. So the devotee will say, Krishna, please be compassionate upon this person. Then Krishna will show his mercy. Srila Prabhupada used to say, I'm always praying for you. I'm your ever well wisher, always praying for your advancement. So certainly Krishna's mercy will go to us if Srila Prabhupada is praying for it. Oftentimes Prabhupada would say, if you do this service, Krishna will bestow his blessings on you. And it, sometimes I would think of the same thing. Well, is Krishna bestowing his blessings, or is it that Prabhupada is bestowing his blessings or asking Krishna to bestow his blessings? And I think you could say both are true. But wherever, and they're not different, because wherever Prabhupada wants to bestow his blessings, Krishna comes. So let me read that quote again. If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we would find in each person's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. Does anyone know who said that? Any English majors out there in the virtual land of Krishna.com? That was said by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Okay. What was the verse in Manjesh is asking? What was the verse in Bhagavatam that says we shouldn't be angry or seek revenge for people who offend us because they're actually the order carriers for our bad karma? Well, there's an incident with Prakrit Maharaj in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. And there's a discussion there that when someone's suffering, when someone is suffering, who's to blame? Is the person who created the suffering to blame? Is it one's karma, destiny? Is it God? And there's so many factors. And you know, the ultimate, Prabhupada explained the ultimate attitude of a devotee when he would have discussions about suffering and karma. And he would say, let whatever is going to happen, happen. And we take shelter of Krishna. But certainly, the main verse that comes up in these kinds of discussions is Tate Nukampam Sushimikshamano, that a devotee should be tolerant, tolerate any pain or trouble or suffering, and while doing so, the devotee should think, or the devotee does think, that he or she deserves worse, that whatever is happening is because of my sinful activities in the past, I deserve worse, and it is Krishna's mercy that I'm not getting worse. So, in other words, a devotee is supposed to accept responsibility for whatever happens and not blame anyone. And ultimately, I mean, we have two friends in this regard. One is the karma. Well, I must have done something to deserve this. Or, if we don't fully believe that and we think, well, maybe as a devotee, my karma is being reduced, so there must be another reason this is happening, and it may be that Krishna has arranged that to teach us something. But somehow or other it's happening, or maybe it's an immediate reaction to something I did or said within the recent past. Not something that is coming up from another life, but something I might have said to somebody yesterday, and now there's a reaction. Okay, so here in this verse, or this saying said by Henry, Bhakta Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, there are many, many seeds of Vaishnav behavior. And one of the things that I see in this is that the connection between forgiveness and compassion, because forgiveness is really an act of compassion. It's described that way. Humility and compassion. You mix humility and compassion, you get forgiveness. It's very nice, isn't it? You know, you really you really can't get it without mixing, without being sympathetic, empathetic, compassionate. And realizing, this is one of my God brothers, he was, you know, we were talking about envy and revenge and forgiving, and he said, you know, in my sober moments, if I consider that there's a person who hurt me and I want to get back at them, and when I want to get back at them, I want to get back at them to hurt them. Why, you know, in some way, or if it's not to hurt them, it's at least I don't want to do anything to make their life any better. So no, I'm not the kind of person, I'm having difficulty forgiving, but I don't want this person to suffer. I don't want to hurt them. But really, then it may be you just don't want to help them. You don't want to see their life improve or become any better than it would have to be. Or, you just, because you're hurt. So this is what he was reflecting on that. And he said, you know, the nature of this world is such that there's already so much suffering that why would I want to do or think in any way other than how I could help another individual? What to speak of, do something that would create more suffering for that person? It's kind of like, you know, a person's being attacked by three men and then you come in and, you know, knock them on the head. You know, well, why would you want to do that? You'd want to help them. So, you know, let's meditate on this concept of compassion, sympathy, and forgiveness, humility. They're all, you know, part of the same group of qualities that go together naturally. And we know for ourselves that we undergo a lot of difficulty living in a physical body, physical pain, mental pain, emotional pain, psychological pain. We undergo, and certainly we can understand other people undergo it. And as devotees, as compassionate devotees, ultimately we want to help people transcend. We want to benedict people. We want to give people the highest blessings. And we want to be, as Prabhupada said, your ever well wisher. I don't know if I mentioned this, but Patanjali said that if you're envious of somebody, the only way to overcome that envy is to become that person's well-wisher. If you think about it, it's such good advice. You think about somebody you might be a little bit envious of. Think about somebody who might be in a position which you envy. Think about somebody who has something that you wish you had. Maybe you wish they didn't have it. And you can immediately realize the wisdom of this advice, that when you are in that situation, that way of thinking is so contaminating that you have to in some way deal with it. And it's such a good way to deal with it is immediately think of that person and think, this is wonderful. I'm so happy for that person that they have this, that they've achieved this, that they're in this situation. And you can see, if you can actually think that way, see how the envy will just dissipate. Then someone might say, well, isn't that a little artificial? And, you know, because Patanjali is talking about the Yoga Sutras, and we generally relate to yoga as something artificial. It's not necessarily coming from the heart, but it's practices which will enable the mind to be controlled, but not necessarily purified. And this is true. At the same time, it's important for sadhakas to subdue, as far as possible, any kind of thoughts which are not Krishna conscious, even if it is artificial, so to speak, artificial, because they're just blocking the path of bhakti. So certainly we discipline ourselves. So certainly if we find envy in our heart towards another person, we can at least think, this is an option here. I should become this person's well-wisher. And that will help me in my bhakti. I should become every person's well-wisher. I should not want anything bad to fall upon anyone. I should only want good for everyone. Even for who? My enemy. What did Jesus Christ say? What did he say? A Sermon on the Mount? something. I'm Jewish, so you'll have to paraphrase. We didn't study this when I was young in Sunday school. We just studied the Old Testament. But I believe Jesus said something like, if someone slaps you on the cheek, then give him your other cheek to slap. Does anybody know out there? Is that correct? Something like that, right? It's amazing. That is amazing, isn't it? I mean, think about that. It's like, if someone is offending you, it's like, don't retaliate. And there's a story in the Bhagavatam. I don't know who it was. Maybe some of you know. No, I think it was Prajapati Daksha. And he was very upset with Narada Muni. And he was, as far as I remember the story, he was yelling at Narada Muni. He was very angry with him. And Narada Muni just listened. And why did he listen? He just allowed Prajapati Daksha to just release that anger. He didn't retaliate, he didn't fight back, he just allowed him to release that anger. He slapped him on the cheek and then he gave him his other cheek, said, yes, keep slapping, because that was going to help him. So the mood, attitude of a devotee is, what will help another person? And if by retaliating, it'll help that person become Krishna conscious, we may do that. We may need to chastise somebody. You're blaspheming my guru, you're blaspheming Krishna. That is another thing. But the motive will always be compassion, sympathy. So I like that quote. Okay, so Bhakta Patrick has a question. I might be thinking of this wrong. Does that mean we should also accept or forgive our own mistakes as well as the mistakes of others? I made a mistake that I never let go. It caused me to lose a dear friend, and it still causes me pain. So should I accept what has happened and not dwell on the past and forgive that mistake to allow myself to heal and move on to becoming humble? I would say in general, yes, not knowing the specifics. I can give you some examples. Now, well, let's go to a basic principle here. The basic principle of bhakti is that bhakti, devotional service, sadhana, is what will purify us of all our past sins and mistakes. And sometimes it's necessary to regret our past activities in order to move on and above them. Otherwise, if we don't, we may continue doing them. Srila Prabhupada distinguishes, at least in my study of the subject, I believe he distinguishes between guilt and regret. And what you are describing sounds more like guilt. The way Prabhupada describes guilt, he describes guilt as something which there can be a little of, but not too much, because if there's too much, then it becomes very negative. It turns into the mode of ignorance, and then it holds us down, holds us back. Whereas I distinguish guilt from regret, at least in the way Prabhupada explained regret, as we acknowledge what we've done in the past that was wrong, and if there is regret, that regret will be the force which will help us overcome those wrongs so that in the future we don't make those same mistakes. So it has, instead of pulling us down, it has a positive effect. Yes, I regret that. I sincerely regret doing this to such a degree that the regret is so strong that I would never do that again. Now, going back to my first point, we can only be purified by bhakti. So we have examples. I think one of the prime examples in our society is that in the early days of the movement, there were many young men who took sannyas, the renounced order. And generally, typically, unless a man is very, very advanced in Krishna consciousness, he would not take sannyas at a young age. Even at the age of 40, only would a man, even at the age of 40 or 50, take sannyas. Only if he were very advanced. And so normally, it's when a man is older, late 60s, early 70s, that time, even 80s, even 90s. I think when Prabhupada took sannyas, there was one man who took sannyas with him. He was 90 years old. So generally, that's retired life. It's the end of life. So what happened was that after some time, sannyasis, some of the men who took sannyas at a young age, were not able to maintain the sannyas. And so and some of them wanted to marry, and some of them just left. They just left. They went off with another woman, and they were embarrassed by that. And so when Srila Prabhupada heard of these things, he would tell them that it's fine if you want to get yourself married. That's no problem. But stay in Krishna consciousness and continue your devotional service. So the idea being, again, that it is bhakti which will ultimately is the purifying process. So we always have to get back to bhakti, no matter how much we've digressed, no matter how sinful we've become, no matter how many wrong things we have done. We have to get back to bhakti with greater determination not to do it again. So you can see that that will be difficult or impossible if you don't forgive yourself, at least sufficiently forgive yourself. Okay, I've done this. This was wrong. I was immature. I was stupid. Whatever it was, I didn't think clearly about it. I was too young. The circumstances were overwhelming, whatever it is. And this happened. And I truly regret it. And I'm going to forgive myself. And it's much easier to forgive yourself where there's regret and a determination to not do it again. It makes it much easier. So I'm going to forgive, because that's the purpose of forgiving oneself, so one can move beyond and above and beyond. Otherwise, what can easily happen is the mistake you made in the past creates kind of an anchor, and so an anchor with a chain to it, and so it always holds you back from going a little further in your life because of what happened in the past. So Srila Prabhupada was very much in the mood of, okay, whatever is done is done, now let's move on. You can't change the past, you can change the future, that kind of thing. You know, the past is the past, but the future can be changed, the past can't. And so Prabhupada was very practical and proactive. And he just wanted us to be enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness. And I think in order to be enthusiastic, at a certain point, we have to reckon with our past and then go on with the intention of learning from that and not committing those same mistakes. And come closer to Krishna. Yeah. Yeah. Did that answer your question, Patrick? Yeah, I mean, the whole point is to come closer to Krishna. So if you find that not forgiving yourself or holding on to some guilt or remorse or whatever is keeping you away from Krishna, then that in itself is an anartha, something unwanted. Okay, I hope that answers your question. I'm going to wait a moment to see if Patrick has a response. Okay, I guess that answered his question. Okay, anyone else have a question before I continue? I think, you know, I'm going to tell a story. This is a nice story. There was a devotee. This was 1970. Those of you who are old enough to know what 1970 was like will understand this. Those of you who are not old enough, I'll have to give you some history. 1970, 1969... anywhere between 1965 and 75, I would say, particularly in the late 60s, early 70s, was an era in America which was characterized by dramatic change in the way young people were thinking. And one of the ways young people were thinking was to become more detached. And if not detached, at least antagonistic to a certain degree towards materialism, at least the way their parents lived their lives. So there were a lot of quote-unquote free spirits at that time. So people would come to Krishna consciousness even without understanding much, just attracted to the environment and that dedicate their lives. People were very detached. So anyway, there was one such person. And I was in Vancouver at that time, and this person would come to the temple and he'd read Bhagavad Gita. And he would say, I don't really understand it, but by reading it, I feel very good. And by reading about all the good qualities that a devotee has, I feel very purified. Is that interesting? Because right now, we're discussing humility, compassion, empathy, sympathy, forgiveness. We're just talking about these qualities. And in ordinary life, even as devotees, what to speak of non-devotees, people don't talk about these things. They tend to talk about, oh, that person cheated you? Well, sue him. Get back at him. Take him to court. You know, that's like, for many people, that's the general mode of operandus, isn't it? You know, get back at them. Oh, that person did that. How could they do that? They're so nasty. The mood is not, I wonder why they did that. Maybe they were going through a difficult time, or maybe they had a difficult childhood, or maybe in their culture that's the way they do things, and they don't really mean it the way I think they do. We don't normally think that way, do we? We don't. It's rare, you know, if a person thinks that way, like, wow. And to be around a person like that is very purifying. Similarly, it's very purifying to hear about these qualities. Just hearing about them. So that's what I wanted to accomplish tonight and next week. Just hearing about forgiveness and the other qualities that support it. And looking at it from different points of view, you will find this next coming week in your life, you might be a little more sympathetic, empathetic, compassionate towards others just by hearing about this. It can actually affect the heart, hearing about the good qualities of the devotees. And also, really important point, if you meditate on someone, a sadhu, who has these qualities, by meditating on that person who has those qualities, you imbibe those qualities. So there are many stories in Shastra, like we discussed the story of Ambarish, and we discussed the story of Thakur Haridas being forgiving the people who are trying to kill him. And of course, you have Nityananda Prabhu forgiving Jagai and Madhai. You have Lord Jesus Christ forgiving the people who are killing him. So by meditating on these saintly persons, meditating on their qualities, we start to imbibe those qualities. And by meditating on persons who have the opposite qualities, we begin to imbibe those qualities. You want to hear something really interesting that Prabhupada said? I don't know what the conversation was relating to, but it was relating to looking at magazines like Newsweek, Time, and so forth. And Prabhupada said that by looking at the faces of some of these politicians, because they're so corrupt, you'll become polluted. So don't look at these magazines. You'll become polluted by looking at their faces. And I think you may have already realized that. My wife, she made a comment. I'm a musician. I have a recording studio. And nowadays, the way recording studios work, they don't work like they used to. And back in the days when I grew up, if you wanted to record something, you would go into a studio and you'd pay somebody to do it. And you knew pretty much nothing about the recording process, or very little. Nowadays, everything's changed with computers, that everybody has their own recording studio. So many, many, many musicians don't use studios or use them very little. Use them for specific aspects of the recording, and they do it at home. So I made many recordings, and I never did any myself. And at a certain point, all the people that helped me, they didn't exist anymore. They weren't, not that they didn't exist, they weren't with me anymore. And I had to learn how to do it. So I subscribed to a couple magazines on recording, and if you know anything about the music world, which I'm sure you do, you know, the way people dress and look in that world is, you know, you say a little bit different in that world, popular music world, a little bit different than the way people look and dress, let's say, who play in the Philharmonic Orchestra. or your typical economics professor or English professor or corporate CEO. So I guess my wife was looking through the magazine, and as she was looking through it and seeing all the pictures of all the people in it, she was saying, I just felt polluted. I said, how can you look at that magazine? I just felt polluted by looking at it. So why is that? Because the face is the index of the mind, and the qualities of an individual come through them. And that's why when we're in association of sadhu, saintly persons, we feel purified. Even we're not in their association, but we think of them, we become purified because they are emanating those qualities, the qualities of pure devotee. And non-devotees, they may have some good qualities and they likely have some bad qualities. And some people tend to have more bad qualities than good qualities. And so by associating with those kinds of persons, we become affected. So why don't all of you pick a few devotees that you find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita or the Srimad Bhagavatam who embody or personify one or more qualities which you would like to develop in your own life. And just this week, meditate on them and see if you become affected by that, by meditating on them, or particularly meditating on something that they did that demonstrated that particular quality which you would like to develop. Or it could be you could meditate on a devotee who's a friend of yours, or a senior devotee in ISKCON, or meditate on something they have done that would inspire those qualities to manifest to some degree in you. And see what happens. Nothing to lose. Okay. So, Manjesh is asking, I know it's stupid to ask, but should we show compassion to atheists? Not being envious, though. This is such an important point, an important question, because sometimes it appears that when a devotee is speaking to someone, particularly an atheist or someone who is antagonistic to spiritual principles, even someone who is a spiritualist who could be antagonistic to the principles of spiritual practice that we follow, that sometimes you might see a very advanced devotee, a very advanced spiritual master, become angry or upset. And it may be confusing. And there are several reasons that may happen, none of which are indicative of any form of envy or anger towards that individual. All of which are indicative of compassion towards that person. Now, sometimes those who are not advanced in spiritual life, in dealing with the world, and dealing particularly with people who are antagonistic to spiritual principles, may actually become angry and upset with that person in the name of helping that person, when really their heart is not there in the right place. So the real principle is that whenever we are dealing with people in the world, our mood should always be for the welfare and benefit. What can I do for the welfare and benefit of other people? How can I act? What can I say? And if that requires being a little heavy or forceful because the person is perhaps being offensive, or perhaps being completely obnoxious or to their own detriment, we may want to say something to stop that. But there may be other ways to stop that, through being extremely sweet and kind. And so, you know, how one deals with someone externally can be misleading sometimes. And there's one story that I find very interesting. There was a reporter, and she was asking Srila Prabhupada about women and their role. And Srila Prabhupada was saying, you know, it's natural for women to be married, to have the protection of a man, the care of a man, the shelter of men. He said that's what women want, that's natural, that's their psychology. And so this was in the early 70s, and so that was the time in which the younger generation was basically revolting against everything, and that was a big thing. that people are against, because they felt that women were being subordinated to men, exploited, and then women should have all the rights that men have. And Prabhupada telling her that she should subordinate herself, or she should not be on her own, really kind of upset her. So she questioned it further, and this discussion was going on. And that discussion is on film, and if you look at that discussion, you don't see in Srila Prabhupada any mood of, well, you know, men are just better than women, and you women, you're just inferior, and therefore just, you know, be quiet. You don't see that at all, which, you know, was a way that men used to think, and a way that many men still do think to one degree or another. What I saw in Prabhupada was a grandfather speaking to his granddaughter, saying, be careful, men will take advantage of you. You really should be a man, he'll protect you, you'll be happier. That's really what he was saying. She was looking at it through the lens of women's liberation, men taking advantage of women, women having to protect themselves. Prabhupada was looking through another cultural lens in which women were always taken care of, and men, that was like one of the highest forms of duty for a man, was to take care of women, take care of the mother, take care of sisters, take care of the wife, the daughter. So oftentimes when we are expressing Krishna consciousness, we may not have that mood of compassion. We may be more of a mood of thinking, this person is foolish, this person needs to be put in their place, I'm going to defeat this person. Then it can become even a battle of egos. I've seen this in myself and others. It just that so-called spreading Krishna consciousness becomes a battle. It becomes an argument. It becomes a debate. I just have to defeat this person. So that's never the mood of a devotee. And I think it's nice. It goes along with what we're just talking about in how we deal with people. If we deal with them with a heart that's forgiving, that's the best way. Okay, so now he's saying, then again, Nectar of Devotion says we should use our anger towards those who blaspheme the devotees. Yeah, so that is true. And, or Nectar of Instruction, and Prabhupada says, yes, use your anger, like Hanuman. He used his anger, he burnt up Lanka. They set his tail on fire, and he got so angry, he burnt the whole city down. So this is true, that Prabhupada said, you can use your anger, but we have to be careful how it's used. Again, our ultimate goal is to help people, and sometimes being angry will help people. Of course, if someone is blaspheming Krishna, then the devotee sometimes he can't tolerate it. He becomes angry out of his love for Krishna. Now, one time I was in San Francisco. Srila Prabhupada was giving class. I believe it was Bhagavatam class. And in the class, he said, last night I was speaking to a scientist, what we call a material scientist. Material scientist meaning one who believes the universe is not controlled by God, or if it is controlled by, or if there is a God, God doesn't have much, if any, control of it, and that everything works according to measurable laws of physics, and those laws act independently of any God that may exist. And really, there is no need for God, there's only, because these laws are everything. So, that kind of person. So Prabhupada, he was speaking to him, and the person wasn't getting it. And so Prabhupada said, in the lecture, he said, this person, said something like that. He was a material scientist. And I told him, you cannot understand Krishna consciousness because you are a demon. So Prabhupada said something like that. And Prabhupada was laughing when he said it. I told him, you cannot understand Krishna consciousness because you're a demon, which is philosophically, it's a fact. If you are sinful, if you are antagonistic to spiritual philosophy and principles and practices, if you have no faith in the existence of God, then you cannot understand Krishna consciousness. Yesham tvantakata papam. Only after piety, actions of pious activities, can you understand, becoming free from sin, performing pious activity. Yesham tvantakata papam. When sin ends. Dandamohena nirmukta. Only in that way can you transcend duality and bhajantimam dridharata, become determined. Anyway, so Prabhupada said that because it was a fact. And then Prabhupada laughed. And then Prabhupada said, and he accepted. Prabhupada said it, and the man actually accepted it. And then Prabhupada said, I can say that, you cannot. So it also depends on relation, like what kind of relationship do you have with this person? Now here, you know, Prabhupada was speaking to this man. He was likely under 40, perhaps even 30, perhaps even his late 20s. Srila Prabhupada at that time probably was 75, 76, 77. So when you are 77 and you're speaking to a 25-year-old, you can get away with a lot. You can yell and scream and jump on the table. Maybe. At least there's a better chance you can do that and get away with it. But if you're 21 years old speaking to a 60-year-old and you yell and scream and jump on the table, it's probably not going to go over that well. So these are all things to consider. So Patrick says, perhaps it depends on which way the anger is used. It may not mean some type of angry action, but perhaps a more useful way. Yes, if it's useful. Sometimes devotees have told stories in which Srila Prabhupada would chastise a devotee for doing something wrong, which Prabhupada felt was seriously wrong. And it was important that the devotee understood how bad it was. Prabhupada would get very angry. And when the devotee would leave the room, the devotees would say that immediately Prabhupada's mood would change, and he didn't show any signs of anger whatsoever, which is unusual because you know when you're angry, it takes time to come down. So their observation was that Srila Prabhupada was using that anger to make a point. And he wasn't really angry. But he needed, you know, sometimes, I found this also, sometimes certain people, if you tell them something, they don't accept it, they don't get it unless you're angry. Or unless you're very, very heavy. It doesn't work unless you're really, really heavy. So sometimes Prabhupada would do that. Okay, so it's 9:06. I would like to, can I read another quote? Are you all awake? Let's read one more. These quotes are nice. Okay, here's a quote that goes along with what we're talking about. Forgiveness is better than punishment. For the one is the proof of a gentle, this is from the first century Greek, so the English is not going to be perfect. Let's read it again. Forgiveness is better than punishment. For one is the proof of a gentle, the other of a savage nature. Wow. The proof of a savage nature. Now, that's a wonderful point. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, you may be familiar with the story of Bhishma Dev lying on his deathbed, and he was given the benediction that he could die at will. He could choose the time, which is kind of cool. Wouldn't that be cool? You could decide when you wanted to die, create the proper environment, get all your friends there, your spiritual master. You could live in Vrindavan for so many years before, and then you could say, okay, now I'm ready. So, Lord, he wanted to die seeing his Lord, and so Krishna came there. And then Krishna asked him, please speak for the benefit of Yudhisthira, who is now going to rule the world. And so he listed the qualities of human beings, and one of the qualities he listed was not to become angry. But that's a quality of a human being. So here, this statement was by anonymous Greek Stoic philosopher from the first or second century. And he said, forgiveness is better than punishment, because forgiveness is the manifestation of the gentle side of the human being, and revenge is the savage side, the animal side, the barking animal. Okay, not always. If you're a kshatriya, if you're a policeman, if you're this or that, you may have to take the law into your hands and do something. But we're talking about in general. Okay. So we're going to end here, and we're going... So your assignment for this week, if you don't mind, meditate, or if you can do this, try to do this, meditate on somebody. Either you know, or someone you know through the scriptures, who has a quality which you would like to develop more deeply. And then just next week we'll talk about that and see if that helps you. Okay, Hare Krishna. Same time next week, next Tuesday, 8 p.m. Tell your friends about this show, and you can see the reruns on Krishna.com. Hare Krishna. Thank you.